Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. And we can't emphasize enough, hopefully, as we go through the Constitution, you're learning so much more in understanding how far the government is getting and operating well outside the bounds. Not only are they operating outside the bounds, they're violating many clauses, many parts of the Constitution that are supposed to be protecting us from them. Anywho, as we go through the learning, obviously, if you need to pray, if you want to, again, on my website, if you want to attend a prayer circle for, you know, asking for the divine hand of providence to start blessing us in reclaiming the Republic in your state and your county and so forth, you're more than welcome. That information is there, and that's with Woody. And when we're done praying, we got to get up and act. I mean, we have to. God's not going to save this nation. He gave it to us, and it's our job to preserve it and save it. So I don't know what we're waiting for, but hopefully people start recognizing that this ain't going to get done without, you know, actual intervention. So with that, what we're focused on and the reason that we're doing all of this and the way we can do this is by demanding full compliance. We have everything in the Constitution to deliver and force every public servant into full compliance. They fail to comply to the Constitution. They violate their oath. They're no longer public servants. We go through this all the time. And we're going to be going through it soon because with the 14th Amendment's around the corner. So with that, welcome back. We've got Sean and we've got Tammy today. Hello. And so welcome back, both of you.
Hello.
Awesome. So in doing the the Bill of Rights, we just covered the Fifth Amendment. We covered the part about the grand jury. As a matter of fact, many states today don't even have a grand jury. You get charged for murder, whatever. They don't even go and get the indictment, even though you have a right to that. So, not that I want murderers to get away. Fact is, they need to have, because it's a layer of protection. You know, I don't think January 6th, because that was, January 6th, those were infamous crimes. And yeah, they were supposedly functioning with a grand jury, but I think that the grand jury, it was a kangaroo court. So they may have
100%.
Right, they may have created something, but they were all operating outside the Constitution. So we also covered nor shall any person be tried of the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb. Actually, Sean just read that. But, Sean, I don't believe we covered it, did we? Did we expound on that at all?
No, sir, we did not.
Okay, so that's the double jeopardy clause, which means that if you've been tried for something, then you can't be tried again. And they've really made that, you know, I'm okay with them making things easy to just say, that's double jeopardy, you can't try that person again, and protecting people from that. I do realize that criminals get away. But again, folks, our legal system was designed to ensure that an innocent person could never go to jail, or at least that was the intent. So, let's dive into the last one, it's the second to last, which is the due process. Tammy, you want to do that? It's nor be deprived of life, liberty?
Sure. And,
okay.
Yep. Nor be, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation.
Yes. And so he's read both of them. So the two clauses, and now the due process here really is applied to the federal government, because remember, all the Bill of Rights was applying to the federal government, right? So
yes, sir.
This just made sure that if a person is going to be deprived, the whole point of due process means that they're going to take your life, they're going to take your property, or your liberty, maybe not in that order, but those three things are in jeopardy of being taken from you, then you have a right of due process. Now, when a person is being removed from office because they violated their oath and they're no longer eligible, is a governor being denied their liberty by removing them from office?
No.
Are they being denied any property? Well, you won't be able to live in the mansion anymore, but, you know, that's the people's house. Yeah, okay. And they're not losing their life. It's not like they're going to go straight to the gallows. They're going home, and they're going to go back to the regular job. And so why would due process even be on the table for a person being stripped of their public service, you know, roles and their seat? They're being removed from their seat, so why would they be even considering due process? Because that's the only thing due process is for, is to ensure that if you're going to lose life, liberty, or property, that you at least have due process first.
And so what would be the process?
The process is a valid call that they have violated their oath. A great way of identifying this is, did that person vote on this particular bill? This bill, let's say the digital currency bill. The digital currency bill would be a direct violation of the Constitution, because a state cannot make any law allowing anything other than gold and silver coin to be the legal tender for the payment of debt. But by allowing digital currency to be legal tender for the payment of debt, they just violated Article 1, Section 10. See? So if they voted for it, then how are you going to prove that you didn't violate it? Because that vote for establishing digital currency, even if the bill failed, that vote in calling for establishing a digital currency was a vote that was a direct violation of the Constitution, whether it passed or not. I mean, the person voted for it. That means there's your evidence that they violated their oath. They're willing to violate their oath. How about this? Any person that voted for and passed the law in Wyoming foregoing the use of a grand jury for indictment of an infamous crime and or capital offense or what have you, because when they passed that law, they violated the Constitution. And there's plenty of states that did that. So I'm just saying that this is not this hard. You know, it's hard to violate.
So once you call them out and say, okay, you violated your oath, then what?
So
because you voted for this bill or against this bill.
Well, so the intent is that if the violation is going on, in other words, they're bringing a bill forward. Unfortunately, the people who bring bills forward are usually lawyers, and they're not public servants, and we don't hire them. As a matter of fact, they're these guys out there that, you know, all they do is they make sure that the bill is going to be copacetic with the state laws and so forth and codes, and they try to make sure that it's ready to go into the code system, that type of thing. But these guys that are in that little circle don't care. They have no litmus test to determine whether the bill that's going to be put onto the floor is going to be violating the Constitution or not. But there's a sponsor that brings that on, you know, because the sponsor's the guy that introduced it into this pool of lawyers. And when they pass it all through and they get everything all happy, the lawyers are all happy. And that legislator then takes it from the pool and puts it into committee, where it goes, or whoever puts it into committee. As soon as people start touching it, they become guilty of violating their oath. Now, what has to happen at the state level is the state needs to create a constitutional compliance committee where both houses will have members that will be a part of that committee, so that at any point in time, they'll always have at least one or two members there in the state house to look at the bill and say, you know what, this should not even go to committee. This should never have came out of the LSO office. And so therefore, this needs to be shredded. This cannot be put onto the floor for debate or even into a committee for debate, because this bill would violate the Constitution. Ergo, we no longer have bills that they would ever have to jeopardize their profession on, right? That yeah. makes sense, doesn't it? Right? You'd yeah. think that they yeah. would already have this process in place, right? I mean, that's what I would have done. Since we knew, go ahead.
I was just going to say, in response to what Tammy was talking about and what we're discussing, isn't that where the petition process comes in, along with the county constitutional compliance committees?
Yeah, so let's go after the fact, because that's where the petitions come in, right? If we're we're operating now with the constitutional compliance and the state is, you know, running, they should actually have these little checks and balances or little processes filtering right, to ensure that nothing ever happens ever again, you know, in their day-to-day work. Now, when they form this committee, there's a bunch of stuff that's been done, recently done, and stuff that goes way, 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 way back. So they've got a job to do to basically identify all of the laws that are on the books that should not be on the books. But they first have to go through the federal constitution. They have to go through and they need to definitize what each of those lines mean based on the ratification debates, based on the terms and definitions provided by the Federalists as the states accepted the constitution in ratifying it. Therefore, once they've done that, and once this is done, this definitized constitution should be applicable in any state, any county, what have you. Now, if it is done in a county and it gets up to a state or gets up to another county, by all means, we would want to see the due diligence done where they cross the T's and dot the I's and make sure that they didn't miss anything. But if we've got an airtight, definitized constitution, then they can start going through and looking at everything that the state is doing that has been directed by the federal government that has not been within their powers. Let's just say if there is a park, a national park, in the state of Wyoming, and we'll clearly see that there is no enumeration for the federal government to operate such national parks, then any and all national parks in the state of Wyoming would then be flagged as state property, and then the state would need to basically go out and provide notice that this is actually, come to find out, this is our land, not yours. You have no right to be here, and therefore, go ahead and pack your stuff up. We understand there's been a huge miscommunication, but that's okay. Just pack up your stuff so you can go home. And, well, I live here. Well, you know, if you want to work for the state, then you may want to, you know, quit your job and apply, because we may want to make this a park. Or we may want to actually start strip mining and strip mining, whatever. We may have plans for this. But bottom line, that's one by one by one. And this does not go through the court. So, the federal court has jurisdiction over what?
The Constitution.
All things arising under the Constitution. Ergo, do you go to a federal court over a matter of a national park, which is not in the Constitution, that the federal governors claim they possess this authority to have, when they don't? So how would the federal court even have jurisdiction?
Yeah.
And the state court If they try to get into the wicks of this, any judge that says, hey, you're violating the federal law, and that you go, hey, hold on here. They have no jurisdiction. They had no ability to make this law. Therefore, the law is void, and we're not allowing them because this is directly impacting the state of Wyoming. We're not allowing them to steal our resources any longer. And if the state court at that point says, okay, we're going to start coming after you because you're violating the law. You know, the court is superior to all things and everything. At that point in time, the state legislature would then basically take removals, and they would take every judge and every person that wants to inflict unconstitutional tyranny and remove them from office. And they would basically give the governor a writ to remove that judge, to remove this judge, to remove that clerk, those county commissioners, whatever, that sheriff. If you're violating your oath, go ahead.
And if the governor doesn't do it, remove the governor?
Absolutely. You betcha, you got it.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so, when we start enforcing the standards, because remember, these people aren't losing life, liberty, or property. They're just, hey, you're no longer eligible because you've chose not to support the Constitution. You've decided to support unconstitutional government. Well, that'll be a good lesson for you. But I'm going to tell you that when this actually starts playing out, there's going to be judges that are just going to bite their tongue. There are going to be people, because once the first one has been removed and they realize that, wow, they are actually using the Constitution by the letter. Wow.
Yeah.
They will have to shut up. Those people who want to actually play the game of, playing hyperbole, like we got Bob Ferguson. Bob Ferguson is just this, he's a juvenile dolt. I mean, he's this little kid that's got this crap-eaten grin on his face, talking about how, he's going to get away with violating the Constitution by demanding these things, because every position he has is literally a violation of the Constitution in fighting Trump for this, fighting Trump for that. And I'm going, okay, the time's coming. The time's coming, because unfortunately, I don't see Trump doing this until he gets called out. And I think hopefully by next year, because it'll be next year is the year before the campaign, right? Because the campaign technically kicks off in 27. The discoveries start happening. The discoveries for the presidential campaign starts happening at the end of 2026, very end of that, going into the early days of 2027, because it's almost a 2-year campaign cycle for president. So when that happens, then there's a lot less focus of trying to get work really done. But because Trump's not running for re-election, and it looks like he's trying to get Vance to be the vice president, the real question is, I won't even ask that. I won't even state that, because I'm not hot on Vance. I'm not hot on, any of these guys, because they're just playing these legal games. They're all leaning on lawyers, and the lawyers are doing their conservative things, and conservatives love it because it sure is conservative, but none of it's constitutional, which, it infuriates me. But anyway, so the state legislature has the authority to basically write, these writs of removal, to remove these people from office. They are the sovereigns. This is a Republican form of government. And when they make the decree that, we're enforcing this, because that's what they'll have to do as well. They'll actually have to make the law that says we will enforce this, either by vote of the state legislature, by vote of the county commissioners, or by vote of a constitutional compliance committee, a properly formed constitutional compliance committee. If they've basically determined that you have violated your oath, you're gone. If you choose to try to exonerate yourself, then you will actually have to basically go back to your county where you're from and get a common law grand jury to basically hear your case, and good luck. So anyway, because then if it passes through the grand jury, then it would actually go to, and bottom line, the grand jury should be a grand jury of the vicinage of the office. So like if it's a governor, then it should be a sample from all of the different counties that will form that grand jury. Technically, that's how it should be. So that there is the full representation of the area of responsibility where they violated that oath. So anyway, we can talk.
Let me ask you this.
Okay.
What do you think the chances are, what do you think the chances are if we have a governor who's also a lawyer that they will understand that this doesn't need to be a process that goes through the courts? Because it doesn't seem to me like lawyers are very willing to give that up.
That's right. Why? Because that's how they make money. See, the redressing of grievances is a money mill for the courts. In other words, when we look at how do we redress grievances, you've got a grievance with government. How do you deal with that? Right now, they've convinced us to basically petition the court and basically pay lawyer fees and pay the court fees, and everybody makes money. They make money.
Whoever has the most money and the most power gets their way.
And the person that's paying the lawyers very seldom gets justice. They very seldom get justice in the justice system. And that's just due to the fact that the legal system is baked with a catalog, or I should say a comic book, of literally the color of law. I mean, all the statutes and all the different laws that they've created that are illegitimate, and they're enforcing them. So a fool would step into court that has no sovereignty over the matter. Only a fool would step into that court, because you're surrendering your sovereignty to a court that doesn't actually have legitimate sovereignty, legitimate jurisdiction. So, anyway.
I think a lot of people, when they're electing a representative or a governor or whoever, most of the time they really like that they're a lawyer. And I disagree. I don't like that when they're a lawyer.
Right. So actually, when we get to the original 13th Amendment, we're actually going to read that, because bottom line, if you are a bar attorney in the United States, then you can't be a citizen without Congress's approval.
Huh.
We'll get to that.
They swear allegiance to a foreign entity.
Well, so when they become a bar attorney, they become an esquire in a British organization.
Exactly.
Okay. So
I was going to ask you, and I think this just bears saying, that's why counties matter most, just like your article. Because if we can put the pressure on the counties and the people in the counties where they are face-to-face with their constituents and they're facing real peril of their office that they covet so much, then you have a lot more leverage than trying to go after these entrenched people at the state level until you have enough counties to put that same pressure on the state legislature, if you understand what I'm saying.
Oh,
it's much more close to home in the counties, because they have to see those people every day and work with them, and it's close to home.
Absolutely. So we're going into break real quick. So we'll be right back after this short promo, but when we do come back, and we need to get back around to the fifth article or the Fifth Amendment, and this is where we need to dive into without just compensation. So this is the seizing of property that Tammy went ahead and read. That was the last clause. So we need to get back to that and talk about that. So we'll be right back after this promo.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so moving forward, what we need to do is just getting back to the Seventh Amendment. What I'd like to do is, or not Seventh Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, and I'd like to get into that very last part of that amendment regarding just compensation. That Tammy had already read that. So,
do you want me to read it again?
Yeah. So let's.
Okay.
That last part is, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Now, does it mean the government can take property from you and give it to somebody else?
No.
No. They can only take it for public use. Taking property from you and giving it to somebody else is tantamount to communism. Right? It's like taking your money and giving it to someone else. That's what communism is. So, what does this mean regarding just compensation? Without just compensation, how is this applied today? Any ideas?
What you were talking about with the Fourth Amendment, where they're taking your data?
Well, no. So,
This is
eminent domain. This is basically talking about eminent domain, where the government comes in and says, we need to put a road through, and we're taking these houses out. And we're going to take these houses and put a road here. They have to now compensate you because the law, the Constitution says, they cannot do this without just compensation. How do they pay, or how do they compensate the property owners who are losing property?
I don't know. It's like, how do they, who defines just compensation?
I'm going to guess, and I've never looked this up, but I'm going to guess that they don't do it right. Because there's only one way to determine just compensation, and that is in front of a jury of your peers. If somebody's going to come along and say, this is the number we're going to give you, and that's all you get, they have just violated your oath. Or I should say, not your oath. They violated their oath, and they have violated the Constitution. So we'll take a pause on this because we got to get to the Seventh Amendment. But the next amendment is the Sixth Amendment. But this right here has a direct tie to the Seventh Amendment. Now let's look at the Sixth Amendment. Go ahead, Sean.
All righty, sir. Amendment 6. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense.
Okay. So there's kind of a lot there that's kind of a mouthful. But this, if you're facing a criminal trial, then you actually have rights to basically confront your accuser. And in traffic court, when you have been accused of speeding by a camera, you have a constitutional right to face your accuser. Because it's the camera that's accusing you of a crime. And the fact that they've allowed a camera and algorithms and everything else to bypass your right of a crime or your right of actual accusations or charges to be brought against you. In other words, they're going down these paths of creating, it's like AI taking jobs. They're allowing computers for improving revenue instead of actually hiring cops to basically pull you over because you were speeding.
Yeah.
And the cops are all okay with not having to do the little administrative things. And as far as I'm concerned, if it's a crime, you have to observe it and you have to basically pull me over and arrest me to create a network that is monitoring, that actually sees my car and identifies my car at that point in moment where it takes the picture of my license plate. Did a warrant get signed by a judge to do so?
No.
That's right. So for this camera to basically take, this is why I will tell people you're probably better off, fighting these camera systems and saying these are violations of our rights. They're violating the Fourth Amendment, and the fact that they're out there, you know, capturing everything and then taking pictures of the prosecutor, because they're still, these cameras are on all the time. Maybe in the city lights and so forth, they may be synchronized or what have you. But on the highway, those cameras are on all the time. They're constant monitoring. That's why you see these accidents and what have you. How did the camera get there on that pole? That's one of those probably speed cameras or weather cameras. But they all are usable. The only thing that's unique about a speed camera is it has this little technology box that will basically translate however they're coming up with your speed and all that data, the ephemeral data and so forth, it all gets attached to that image. They send it to you. Here you go. You pay us by check, credit card, whatever. Bottom line, for them to create, just like a closed-circuit television system, a monitoring system on the highway, they're violating our Fourth Amendment right. And so, you know,
question.
Go ahead.
How do we define, or is it defined anywhere in the ratification debates or the Constitutional Convention, the meaning of the word unreasonable in the Fourth Amendment?
You'd have to go into
just playing devil's advocate, because if the camera sees you and records you breaking the law, then is it unreasonable? Is it an unreasonable seizure of your license plate number if you're committing a criminal act and it's recorded on camera?
Well, so the fact that the camera's there and recording all the time anyway.
Because I can go record, I can go stay in the same place the camera is and record, and I have a right to do that, but because I'm a citizen. But the government doesn't have that right. It's not a citizen, it's not a person, but if there was any discussion of what exactly is unreasonable search.
Well, so actually, there are some states that make speed traps illegal. Speed traps meaning a cop is basically sitting there waiting with a radar or laser, whatever, to obtain, basically ticket anybody that's speeding. Those are speed traps. Some states have made those illegal because it's entrapment. And because they'll go into places which are perfect, where they can hide and disguise, because in the normal traffic of things, when you're driving down the road and you see a cop, you're going to adjust your behavior appropriately. When you don't see those cops, you don't have the ability to adjust your behavior. And so that's why they know if they go hide, they will, you know, you will get out of their good behavior and be a bad person. But the reality is this. Now, let me get to the bottom line of law. Why do we have traffic law? Is it to make revenue for the state, to basically support a larger police force, or is it for public safety?
I say public safety.
Right, absolutely. Almost everything had been introduced in the very beginning for public safety purposes. And then they started getting into punitives and so forth and so on. And 9 times out of 10, people are getting cited that, you know, okay, you were speeding, but did anybody get hurt? In other words, why can't you go 150 miles an hour on this stretch of highway, a nice, solid, concrete highway? You've got a car that can handle it. Now, if your car loses control and has an accident, then you should have full liability, right? In other words, you should be held fully liable for your actions. See, here's the thing. There's this incestuous relationship between insurance companies, the people, law enforcement, and the law. And so insurance companies, because everybody gets insurance, they want this, you know, unreasonable levels of protection, where I think insurance companies should easily be able to say, you know, if you don't wear a helmet and you're riding a motorcycle and you bust your head open and you become a vegetable, we're not responsible. We're not responsible for you making the decision of not using the safety gear, for not having your seatbelt on. We're not responsible. You made a choice to be driving in that condition, and so you're fully liable. It's this, you know, so when you start looking at, because this, then the insurance companies would go, wow, we would not lose as much money if we could do that, but the states demand that people be protected from themselves.
Right.
In other words, it's the nanny state. And so the state demands it. So basically, insurance companies have to be, you know, chiseling and everything else. And it actually, this is a hostile environment, all in the name of public safety. So when you have somebody that goes down the freeway and speeds, even though they didn't, you know, have an accident, and let's say they just, you know, they went 150 miles an hour, got from point A to point B really quick, and they made it to their destination safe and sound. Does the insurance company need to know that action happened? Well, today they want to know. So this is so insane, the connections of what is happening to your car, to the road, you know, you're driving and so forth, because they want black boxes to basically identify what your behavior is so that they can adjust their charges based on your behavior type, so that they can make more money off of you because you're a greater risk. Well, what if you're the best driver in the world and you never have an accident? And they've basically been punishing you because you may be aggressive, but you're an awesome driver. You don't have accidents, and the whole point is when it comes out of shelling money out, that's when accidents occur. So we've created a system that is just absolutely insane. And as a matter of fact, let's even go one further. When you actually do have an accident, and it's a minor accident on your car, that gets pinned to your VIN number. Now you go try to sell your car to a dealership or to anybody, and they say, has your car been in an accident? They can actually go to a database and pull up the fact that it was. Hold on, how about being secure in your person? Are you secure in your person when anybody can pull up that data? And here's the real thing. They use this to basically chisel down the value that you have for that vehicle. because you restored it. It was maybe a little fender bender. No harm to the frame, engine, you know, major components or anything else. It was just a little fender bender. And so they say, well, even though you got it all fixed and it looks okay, we still want to chisel you down because it had an accident. And as far as I see that, the fact that they're using your data and they're doing this to basically, you know, so they can make more money off of you. I see this as a very evil cesspool that we've created. Because bottom line, the fact that you had that accident, the fact that that car was in an accident, your property was in an accident, how is that data relevant to be able to get into the hands of everybody else? Why isn't that secure?
Well, shouldn't we have laws that protect the consumers?
We should.
Because if I go buy a car and I ask a person if it's ever been in an accident and they just tell me no.
Yes, so we should. We absolutely should. As a matter of fact, it hurts my head. I mean, when I start thinking about this, I get a headache. When a person, somebody comes along and they copy all of your title information, and they go to a bank and they go to several banks and take out all these different loans on the equity of your home, and they walk away with all this money, and then the bank comes in and takes your property. How in any state is this legally happening? How is a person being denied their right of property and having their property confiscated because somebody else did something bad? I can't believe that there's not laws right now that says no citizen shall lose any property whatsoever unless it's been proven that they were directly involved in whatever the crime was. They took out these loans. You have to prove that they took out those loans. If you can't prove that, then you can't take their property. In other words, now the bank, because the banks and all of these big businesses who have lots of deep pockets and money go in there and they keep your legislatures from protecting you.
Yes, sir, they do.
The tire companies is a great example. The tire companies have gone in and got your state legislatures to create laws that if your tread exceeds a certain amount, because they've proven safety-wise, it starts, you know, changing your ability to stop in all conditions being equal. Well, hold on here. So what that means is that they've created a law that says if you have a tire in that condition, you are forced to buy a new one. In other words, if you go in and a tire dealer, whoever sells tires, sees that your tread, they say, I can't touch that tire. If I touch that tire, I've got to put a new one on it. And you've got a flat, and it could be repaired. They could repair it, but they won't. You have to get a new one. And so here's the rub. What ends up happening is that they have created these laws so that they will actually get you to buy tires sooner, and instead of you being able to make your own decisions. What happened in the old days? How many people had tragic accidents because they knew their tires were bald, so they slowed down in the rain, and they drove carefully because they knew their tires were bald. But they just didn't have the money to be able to make that spending right then and there. And now we have a society that says, we don't care. We don't care if you can't afford it. We've made the law, and we're going to hurt you. And
plus, wouldn't they tend to tell you that your tire needs replaced?
Oh, yeah. So, and
as more often, even when it didn't need replaced?
So it's not just the tread. Your tire actually has an expiration date. They started doing this, too, because they basically played the numbers, and they go, a tire that is 10 years old becomes a risk for anybody. Now, that doesn't mean that it will actually explode before you've gotten the full life of that tire 20 years down the road. They just say that they've labeled it with an expiration of, you know, the probability of risk goes up at about that time. But what is the, you know, is it 7%? 7% risk? Well, I'm willing to take that. But they created a law that says if your tire is over 10 years old, you got to change it. In other words, your state legislature is allowing these tire companies to start creating these games so that they can force you to buy new tires sooner because it's good for their business. And then what do we do with the old tires? Now that they've created, you know, a larger dump of perfectly good tires, now what?
Anyway, now you got to pay to get rid of them.
There you go. And but, you know, they're not doing that. As a matter of fact, they do have a recycling fee. And the recycling fee, it only covers the transport to a recycling point. But somebody else is making money off of the recycling gear. So the point is this, is when we start looking at how things are being done, whether it being a criminal and you've got a right to a speedy trial, face your accuser, you can compel witnesses and so forth, and you can even have assistance to defense counsel. I have a problem with the fact that they have gone down this path of it's all about safety, and now it has nothing to do with safety, and it has everything to do with making sure the tire companies, insurance companies, all of these people are making money. Let's add one more component to our legal system and see what a cesspool this is, because Sean, read the Seventh Amendment.
In suits at common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of common law.
There you go. So, when you actually get a $250 ticket for going through a stoplight with a camera, is the controversy, because common law, traffic laws, those are common law. Marriage law, that's common law. Family law, common law. Property law, common law. So, when you get this ticket and it exceeds $20, you have a right to a trial by jury. Do you ever get that? No. As a matter of fact, that happens to be another thing that, because it says right here, the trial by jury shall be preserved if the controversy exceeds $20. Marriage. How many people getting divorced are squabbling over $20 or less? None. And these court systems, the judges would lose control. They would not be able to drive agendas. And the people, the people in these juries, would actually be able to dole out true justice. Too many times, family court and those types of things, it is all about an agenda. You know, because I've seen it too many times where men have been excoriated just because they're the man. And at that point in time, they're the open, it's open season on men. And it's been that way for a long time. Our society has really become misandrist. You think that because they claim that we're all misogynists, but the reality is society has become misandrist, where they hate men.
It's a subversive plot.
Right. Now, I believe, and I think, even though when you go to a church for divorce, because technically, is marriage a power granted to the state? Is there anything in your state constitution that has empowered them to actually conduct marriages?
No, definitely not.
Right, but they do it. And they regulate the divorces thereof. How? When before, how did marriage, who conducted marriages in the very first, you know, century of America? Probably all were done in churches. They may have started doing common law marriage by either, you know, the sheriff or the mayor or something like that. And they may have created that law, but they can't create a law at the state level without the people delegating that power to them. So how is it that over these very costly divorces, the state is getting away with putting a judge and driving an agenda? Because it serves the agenda. Don't question the agenda. So when we really look at all of this, this is where I come to the conclusion that our entire legal system, because we've abandoned, unconstitutionally abandoned common law, and we never really nailed down common law for each of the states, we have failed ourselves, because we've put way too much trust and faith in the judges and lawyers who said, don't worry, it's complicated, we'll take care of it for you. And they've been screwing us all the way down the road. Ever since they started taking over, they've just been screwing us over. So it's time where we actually have to revitalize our common law courts and actually get to a point where we no longer are subject to the bar court and this, I'll just say, a legal system that is designed for civil law and not designed for common law. Because common law is a legal system to give you justice. Civil law is a legal system that doles out punishment and, you know, can take, you know, your property from you. Because what do they call that case if you get away with murder like O.J.? The family, the Goldsmans or whatever their names were, took him to court. What kind of case was that?
Civil.
There you go. It was a civil law court where they went in to go after financial damages because they didn't have to prove that he killed somebody. They just had to prove that he did something wrong. You know, that what he did, you know, they deserve payment for. In other words, the threshold of a crime occurring and everything else is just gone. And it's a lot easier to not get justice, to dole out punishment. When that woman burnt her lap with coffee that she put there, did she get justice? No, she went to civil court and she got punitive damages. Civil law is not designed for justice. And America and our framers, they understood that we needed a justice system, not a system where we could actually use it to be played, because they just manipulate us. That's why they get these guys called ambulance chasers to actually run around to say, hey, you can sue for this, you know.
I can. You see the commercials we have to watch around here. It's outrageous.
Yep, I bet. I'll bet it is. Okay, so as we travel into the Eighth Amendment, let's go ahead and get into this, because this will be my final rant on our legal system. Oh, you know
we're
what?
Hold on.
Yeah, thank you. I just noticed we're now running out of time. It's nice to have those little blocks that boop, 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 start hitting us. So the bottom line is, when we come back, we will hit the Eighth Amendment and then the Ninth and the Tenth. And then we'll get into a lot of amendments that were either questionable or have been expunged unconstitutionally. As we go through those, we'll identify them. But folks, we're 10 amendments in, and we got 17 more to go, almost 10 amendments in. So maybe in the next week or so, we'll be wrapped up. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.